Is anger a blessing or a curse? What has it been in your life? Blessing, curse. Blessing, curse. Throughout my years of life and ministry, I've seen it both ways. I've seen suffering and injustice from the fires of anger, burning everything, innocent things all around them. I've also seen suffering and injustice from the absence of anger, a quiet that says, I'm okay with something terrible that's happening here. 3,500 years ago, an old man walked up a mountain half a world away and changed history. He was 80 years old, but undiminished in strength and unbent in stature. Not long before this, a voice had appeared to him in the wilderness that changed his life. The voice came from a burning bush that caught fire but didn't burn up. It called to him by name, Moses. And Moses said, "Who are you?" And the voice replied, "I am." Generations would call the voice Yahweh, the Lord, the one who is. The old man's life changed in that moment, and a shepherd of flocks became a shepherd of people. He followed and obeyed the voice all the way back to the land of his childhood in Egypt, where they miraculously set the Hebrew people free from the most powerful civilization on the planet. The old man followed the voice and led the people out into the wilderness at the foot of Mount Sinai, where the voice wanted to meet with the old man. The voice called the old man up the mountain to receive a gift that would be for all people. But the old man had an agenda of his own. On the top of the mountain, the voice said, "I will give you ways to live that will be a blessing to my missionary people and to all people. Chisel them into stone tablets." But the old man stood still. And he said, "I want to know who you are." Out of the emptiness, the voice replied, "You can't know me. You can't fully know me. But I will pass my presence before you and I will tell you who I am." Then the presence of I am passed in front of the old man and declared, the Lord, compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness and rebellion and sin, yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sins of their parents to the third and fourth generation." What the old man brought down from the mountain that day changed life on this planet. The 10 won'ts, the 10 commandments, but also the knowledge that the voice, Yahweh, the Lord, is a God of love and justice and slow anger. We learned that day that anger, that slow anger, is a key attribute of a good and loving and rescuing God. But how do we live with that anger in our lives so that it leads us to life and not to destruction? That's what we're talking about today. This summer, most of you know, Tommy for sure knows, we're going through a teaching series on the book of Psalms. And Psalms is an incredible book because it's full of God-facing poems and songs and prayers that makes an incredible claim that in the midst of a suffering, of a world full of suffering and setbacks, that if we meditate on the teachings, if we meditate on the Psalms, if we meditate on the teachings that it is presenting to us, and we put our hope in God's coming rescuer and king, then you and I will gain the ability to flourish, to be happy, to be ashreya, to be blessed no matter the circumstances. To be happy based on circumstances is just weak. It's vulnerable. And that's not what Psalms is offering us. It is saying, if you will listen to me, if you will heed my words and meditate on these teachings that we have gathered together from our people over thousands of years, and you will put the Lord's Messiah, His coming King, as the great hope of your life, then you will have a strong hope that will lead you to being Ashreya, to being blessed, to being happy, independent of your circumstances. What a treasure that is, if we'll only grab a hold of it. One of the most important things I think that the book of Psalms teaches us is how to deal with our anger so that it becomes a blessing and not a curse. So it teaches us how to build up our life instead of burn it down. The topic of anger is addressed all throughout the book of Psalms, but one of my favorite places is Psalms 109, and we're going to get into that today. So we're going to talk about what anger is, and then the three lessons out of this Psalms that the writer of this Psalms is passing on to us, things that he got right that we can learn from him. So what is anger? Every one of our emotions is a gift from God. Every one of them. And anger is no different. Anger is a gift. It's the protector emotion. It says something innocent, something good, something important, something pure, something valuable is being threatened here, and it needs to be protected. And like the old man, like Moses found out on the mountain that day, slow anger is an attribute of God because God loves. And when you love something or you love someone, it makes you angry when they are threatened, when they are hurt, when they are destroyed, or even when they are destroying themselves. But it isn't just the God of the Old Testament that gets angry. Jesus gets angry. Jesus' life is full of anger. Why? Because they're the same person. Old Testament, New Testament, it's the same Testament. And it kind of messes us up by calling them those things, but it's the same Testament. The Old Testament is our holy book. We are God's chosen people. It is ours. It is every page, every word is pointing to Him and pointing to the Messiah. Jesus said over and over again, He was very clear about who He is. He was killed not because people didn't understand who He is. He was killed because people very clearly understood who He is and they wanted to remove Him. In John 8:58, Jesus says, "Before Abraham was, I am." Wow! Before Abraham was, I am. He's very clear in multiple ways. I am Yahweh. I am I am. I am the one who is and was and is to come. He forgives sins. All sins are fundamentally against me. So if you and you hurt each other, I have the right to forgive it because fundamentally they're all against me. No one in history, no one that has walked the face of the earth had such incredible claims about who they were and who they are. Jesus, Yahweh, God among us, Old Testament, New Testament, same Testament. And it's a weird projection that we have on Jesus that leads us to believe that He is both soft and safe. Jesus is anything but soft and safe. He turned the world upside down and He is still doing it. And He was often and He was frequently angry. I'm just going to look at a few places here, just as an example. Jesus in Mark 3, he goes into the synagogue, and there's a guy there with a shriveled hand, and people are looking at Jesus, and they're looking at the guy with a shriveled hand, and they're just kind of waiting like as an ambush. What's he going to do? Is he going to cause controversy? Because you're not supposed to in the Pharisees' rules, you're not supposed to heal on the Sabbath. And Jesus, I'll just read what it says here. Who is calling a pastor when they know? We're going to fix this. So Jesus He looked around them in anger, and the word is better translated wrath. He looked around in wrath, flared nostrils, and deeply distressed at their stubborn, hard hearts. And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Jesus was angry. He was angry. He was full of wrath because they were acting in ways that was twisting people and twisting the representation of God in the world and making it harder for people to have life and to find God and to be made whole. That whole place and all of that stuff was made so that people could find God, and they were putting obstacles between people and God, and it made him mad. Revelation 3:16, that's the last book in the Bible. Jesus has died, risen again, ascended to heaven, and this is a vision about what is to come. But Jesus appears to his disciple John on the island of Patmos, and this is given in a letter form. It's about what is to come, but there's also in this a message to seven churches. And one of the churches, Jesus, in 3:16, Jesus has a message to a group of Christians who've become complacent and half-hearted, in their faith because of the comforts of their wealth and their standard of living. The fire is burned out of them. He says, "I know your deeds and that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were either one. So because you are lukewarm, neither hot or cold, I am about to vomit you out of my mouth." Some of your translations, to make it nicer, might say spit you out, but it's vomit. "I am about to vomit you out." He was angry. And it's a warning to all of us Christians. Am I hot? Am I lukewarm? Am I all in? Where am I in my love and commitment with Christ? Why was he angry? Why is he talking this way? "I'm going to vomit you out," to people that he loves. It's because he loved them. Because he loved them and he knew what they could be, and he knew what their complacency was costing the world. Heaven and earth, heaven and hell, life and death. They are messengers and sons and daughters of the Most High God to restore and rescue the world. And they become complacent and distracted. Anger is a protector emotion, and slow to anger is an attribute of God. But anger is not always an expression of the character and the presence of and nature of God, right? I'm pretty sure that we've all seen the opposite more times than we would like, coming out of us, coming out of the people around us. Anger can protect your house or it can burn it down. Ephesians 4:26 through 27, Paul in his letter to the church in Ephesus, he says this, "In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Don't let it go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold." Paul is saying, be angry. Be angry. Be angry. But don't let it lead you astray. Don't let it make less of you. Don't let it be an opening for the devil to take you over and to play you like a fiddle. In other words, the Bible is telling us that anger is a gift. But it's like the gift of fire. It can be an incredible tool for good or a terrible force of destruction. So how do we hold it well? How do we live in that place where we can hold and wield this fire in ways that leads to life and to goodness, not destruction? And that's what Psalm 109 is all about. We've got three lessons from the author of this psalm. Number one, be angry but be honest. This guy was very, very clear and honest about his anger and what he's angry about. Lyra did a great reading. But my goodness, just skim through it. We're not going to go verse by verse on anything here because it's the big ideas that I want you to take away. But he is praying this to God about the people that have wronged him when he did nothing but good towards them, and they returned every bit of that with hostility and oppression and defrauded him. May his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. May his children be wandering beggars, and they may be driven from their ruined homes. May a creditor seize all that he has, and may strangers plunder the fruits of his labor. May no one extend kindness to him or take pity on his fatherless children. This guy is mad. He's mad and quite articulate all at the same time. So he's angry, and he's also very honest about it. But that's not typically us. That's not typically how we handle anger. Anger is very likely the emotion that we are most likely to lie about. Bad sentence, but you get my point. Why? All sorts of reasons why we would lie about being angry. Because we don't want to upset a situation. So I'm angry, but I won't say anything, and I won't let anyone know. I'm just going to get to keep the peace, and I don't want anyone thinking bad about me or whatever else to not upset the situation. Or we don't want to look weak, and we don't want to look vulnerable. We don't want to admit to other people or let it be known to other people that they can affect us. So instead of being assertive, instead of being direct, instead of being honest about saying what's true, we avoid. We become passive-aggressive. We minimize. We lie. We communicate our anger to other people instead of the people that actually need to hear it. We take it out on someone or something else. We kick the dog, is the old phrasing. Hopefully you're not actually kicking the dog, but sometimes people do that. Carrie, just kidding. Just kidding. Bad joke. My wife does not kick dogs. The psalmist doesn't do any of those things. He has real, legitimate things to be angry about. And he is angry about those things, and he's honest about his anger. And he says what is true very clearly and very directly. So why is it so important for your life and for mine on how we handle this fire? Part of it is because unexpressed or poorly expressed anger is literally poison in our veins and poison in our relationships. Without the benefit of modern psychology and science, Mark Twain observed that anger is an acid that does more to harm the vessel in which it is stored than anything on to which it is poured. Modern science calls this a physiological toxin. Chronic anger is incredibly damaging to the cardiovascular system. It is literally poison in our veins. And it doesn't benefit our relationships at all to have suppressed or mismanaged anger, to not be honest, to not set boundaries, to not be truthful, to not be assertive. Another reason is part of the it reveals what you love. Anger, being honest about your anger, is important because it reveals what you love. Remember, anger is a protector emotion. It says that there is something that I love, that I care about, that is being threatened, and I need to protect it. I need to do something about it. Being honest about what makes you angry, especially the thing that makes you angry the most, triggers you the easiest. It will tell you what your heart loves, what your treasure is. Watch that in your life. What gets me angry the fastest? What gets me angry the most? They're not always the same thing. That's what you love. That's what your treasure is. Being honest about your anger is a way of facing yourself, of seeing who your God is. And then realizing, thinking, checking, how well do my instincts and my emotions align with my values? Because they don't. I hope they don't. And that is always a work, as we are living a God-facing life that is always a work in progress. Let me give you an example. 2020, riots going on in Atlanta because the people that lived in these nice neighborhoods, they were cheering on the rioting and the destruction. Yeah, you stand up for yourself and you burn your own neighborhoods down and you loot your own stores and blah, blah. They were completely fine with that. And they had the mayor on speed dial and encouraging all this stuff. But as soon as the rioters get to the edge of their neighborhood, then it's call out the National Guard, build the machine gun nest, get these people out, so they could feel self-righteous and virtuous about being a part of a movement that they thought gave them status. But the moment that it started threatening their families and their stores and their streets and their homes, then it was get out the machine guns and draw a hard line no matter what you have to do. And most of us are actually like that. We don't really care about the bigger picture of most of anything, what's happening in the world, what's happening in the country. We don't really care about those things. We care about, did somebody cut me off in traffic? We don't care about the massive amount of genocide that's happening right now. We don't care about the trafficking of children that's on an epidemic level, that it is just wrought through our nation and our government and all of that. Don't get upset about those things. Dismiss it as easily as we can. Ignore, move away. What we care about is somebody cut us off in traffic. What we care about is somebody was rude to me. If it's much smaller, but it affects me, then that's what I care about. That's what I'll get stirred up about. That's the drama of the day. Why? Because it tells us who our God is, what our values are, and what we really love on an emotional level. And then it lets us ask that great question, is that who I want to be? Is that who I want to be? And it gives us an opportunity, once we see it, once we see ourselves, it gives us an opportunity to do something about it. Anger is an incredible, being honest about our anger is an incredible gift. Lastly, being honest, being angry and being honest about our anger is important because it is a sin to never get angry. It's wrong. It is a sin to never get angry, to be passive, to be accepting, to be placid in the face of evil and wrong is wrong. It is loveless and it is cold-hearted. A saying in the early church attributed to a number of different people, so I'm just going to say a saying from the early church. He who is angry without cause sins. He who is angry when there is cause, who is not angry when there is cause, sins. Unreasonable patience is the hotbed of many vices. More modern version of that is all that evil needs to flourish is for good men to do nothing, for good men to not care, for good men not to give a dang, to not get hot and bothered about things that we should be hot and bothered about. There are things worth getting angry about in this world, and it doesn't make us noble to be passive or to be tranquil or indifferent in the face of evil and wrong and injustice. We should be broken-hearted and hot-blooded over things. And it doesn't make us noble to be cold, to be indifferent. The psalmist wasn't just honest about his anger. Second thing, he took his anger to God. He processed it in the presence of God. He's incredibly honest, but where is he being incredibly honest? He's taking it straight to the throne room of God and saying, God, this is what happened. This is what happened to me, and this is what I want. I'm appealing to the court of the Most High God. This is what I want, and I'm taking it to you. He believed that he could say anything to God. And not only can God handle it, but that God is the ultimate arbiter and mediator of justice. And this is absolutely the thing to do if you believe that there is a God who is both loving and just and will bring all people and all things to justice. There's a lot of a lot of avoiding and not liking of this thought of like a God of justice in our comfortable, nice world, someone that will bring all of us into account. There's a man named Miroslav Volf. He's an American theologian today, but he's living a very different life and in a different, very different world than the one that he grew up in. He was born in what is today called Croatia, but when he was growing up, it was called Yugoslavia. He lived through the Yugoslavian Civil War and the national breakup, and he lived through the atrocities that that conflict brought into his world. And he said this about a God of justice. He says, "To not believe in a God of justice is a luxury belief for the privileged and the comfortable up until it invariably dies in a, quote, scorched land soaked in the blood of innocence." A God of justice is the only assurance that provides the power to restrain vengeance and pursue justice and reconciliation. It's our only hope. If you believe that there is a king in this world and that he is good and he is just, what better place do you have to take your anger than to the king? Who else would you take your hope in all the wrongs that you see and all the things that you're dealing with to set things right than the good and rightful king? We are either embracing or rejecting God by whether or not we take our anger to him. We are either rejecting or embracing God by whether or not we take our anger to him. The psalmist took his anger and his experience of injustice into the throne room of the High King, and so should we. But he wasn't just angry and honest about it. He didn't just take it to God, but he also did what was right with his anger. That's the third thing, do what is right. There are a lot of things that we learn about how to face our anger and injustice when we take things to God. The psalmist is being extremely clear and extremely poetic. I want, this is what happened, and here's what I want. But he's taking it to God. And in God's presence, he learns how to do what is right with his anger. We learn that the right thing to pursue is not vengeance, but justice, setting things right. We pursue the righteous outcome. We don't let the monsters of this world make monsters of us. We don't give them that power. We learn that righteous anger is slow anger. Remember who Moses found on the mountain. The Lord, compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and abounding in love and faithfulness. God's anger, righteous anger, is slow. It is cautious. It is controlled. In Matthew 5, Jesus says, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." I've preached a whole sermon on that sentence. That word meek absolutely does not mean weakness. Jesus is for sure not saying, "Blessed are the weak and the pathetic and the ineffective, for they will inherit the earth." The image of meekness means power, means strength under control. The image for this is a wild stallion that has been captured and brought under the discipline of a soldier to become a war horse. So a better translation of this would be, "Blessed are the war horses of God, for they shall inherit the earth." That sounds different, doesn't it? Blessed are the war horses of God, not the wild stallions doing their own thing, running amok. Blessed are the ones who have been brought under the discipline and the purposes of God. Their strength brought under a purpose of him. The last thing that we learn from the psalmist and the psalmist God on doing what is right with our anger is this, is that we don't hate We don't hate the person. We love the person and we hate the sin. There's no way abolish. This is no escape. This is no absolution of the need for justice or responsibility. But it changes our goal on what it is that we are trying to destroy. When someone wrongs you, do you want to see them destroyed or do you want to see them face justice? Sometimes those two things are the same. Fully acknowledge that. Sometimes those two things are the same, but most of the time they're not. So what do you want in the most of the time situations? What do you want when your brother, when your neighbor, when your coworker, when your client, when your friend, when the other driver on the road wrongs you? What do you want? Can you love a wrongdoer and also pursue justice? Can your anger empower you and motivate you to do what is right? Can you hate the sin and love the sinner? And importantly, can you do that for your own life? Can you love yourself and also hold yourself accountable? Can you see your failings for what they are? Something that you need to face, something that you need to take to God, and let it go. Can you love the sinner that is behind your own eyes and hate the sin? The psalmist so evidently learned how to hold and how to manage this fire of anger from his time in the presence of God. Why? Because God is angry. God is angry. With great love and great injustice comes great anger, and God has so much to be angry about, to be wrathful and righteously, terrifyingly angry. Because God loves. And God has made things that are so good and innocent and pure. He knows better than anyone the possibilities and the goodness and the nobility for which all people and all creation were made for. And because of who He is, because of the righteousness and the love of God, years after the psalmist wrote these words, the God of love and the God of justice made a way to bring justice and destruction to sin without destroying the sinner. He took on all of the injustice of the world. Look at what the psalmist is righteously complaining about. Everything there in Psalm 109, Jesus faced. He was mocked. He was oppressed by evil men. People lied about Him and falsely accused Him. He was put on a false trial and condemned. His days were few. And all that He had was taken from Him. Jesus hated the injustice and evil of sin, but He never stopped loving the sinner. And He laid His life down for you and for me, to pay the price justice demands so that evil could be destroyed while saving the evildoer. Out of a righteous anger and an incredible love, Jesus, God, Yahweh, I Am, did that for you. Friends, if that doesn't change how you hold anger, I don't know what could. The cross makes us more gracious because we know what it means to have received grace. It makes us more angry at evil and injustice because we are more clearly aware of its terrible cost. And we also love more and love more deeply because we have experienced what true love is, and we know love more truly and more deeply. Friends, may the love and anger of God lead you to be angry in ways that make your righteousness shine like the stars in the heavens. Let's pray.